Hey guys, this is Nancy Perez. This is Live Cope, LLC. We're a self-help podcast out of Colorado Springs, Colorado. I am coming to you from Studio 916, and I am back with another episode of Women Who Inspire. And today, I have an incredible woman that has overcome so many different things and is doing amazing things here in the community and is just such an inspiration to me and other women, Yolanda Avila, Councilwoman Yolanda Avila. Hi, welcome.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for inviting me to sit here with your audience today. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for agreeing. So I actually got to sit in an audience and hear you talk probably about a year and a half ago. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, I was just so blown away by your story. And when I started to do, this series of Women Who Inspire, I was trying to think of women in our community that I could call to see if they would be available, you know, to sit with me. And your story had such an impression on me because obviously you guys are just listening and you don't know, but Ms. Yolanda Avila is legally blind. She has a guide dog, and that has not stopped her. If anything, I think that has propelled you to keep working and doing and working on amazing things here in the community and inspiring women in the community. So tell me a little bit about the backstory of how that came about, what happened. I want to know everything, and I want the listeners to be able to like know that nothing can stop you and everything is possible.
Thank you so much, Nancy. You know, it starts with my dad. He served in the U.S. Army. And he was stationed here along with my mom in 1958.
Wow.
And when mom saw that Pikes Peak, America's Mountain, she said, oh my God, this is beautiful. This is where I want us to have our home base, and this is where I want to retire. And so even though we went to France and we went to different states and lived, we always came back to Colorado Springs. I am one of seven children. Sixth child. The first five, and then 7 years difference between myself and the first five and my little brother, or my young, he doesn't like to be called little brother, like younger brother.
That's right. Okay.
And now he really wants to be the younger brother now that we're this age. So, I've had four brothers and there were three girls. And so we mostly grew up here in Colorado Springs. We grew up dancing with La Fiesta Bonita. Mm. We used to perform at the Acacia Park, and we did ballet folklorico, and my mom was a dance instructor because she had learned regional dances when she was a teacher and going through teacher's college in Mexico.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was we were out in the community, and we learned to engage with people, and mostly people, you know, would attend that were Latinos in the community. And a lot of the Latinos at that time, you know, in the early 60s and 70s, were mostly from the San Luis Valley. You know, the Latinos that have been here for 500 years.
Wow.
But they love coming, you know, to the fiestas and feeling like a little bit of culture.
Right.
Especially, you know, back in the day. And so I grew up here and going to most of the schools. I went to Emerson. I went to Mitchell. I went to Pikes Peak Community College, and I ended up graduating from Colorado College. But that journey was, it wasn't your traditional journey. I was a very young bride.
Okay.
And I ended up living in my parents bought their home 52 years ago. Wow. In 1967 here in Southeast on Michigan. And my mom's still alive. She's 96 and still living in the home.
Wow.
And I, once was married, we lived here. We lived in Deerfield Hills community. We lived in Eastboro. So this has really been a part of our community where my kids have gone to school. But I found myself being a single parent in 1980, like 81, 82. And when I was going to Colorado College, and I would go to college, and there was times I had a boy and a girl. Yeah. Eltimio and Dulce, that I didn't have enough money to put gas in my car. And I lived a couple of miles from CC. So I'd get my kids on the bus to elementary school, and then I would head over and walk over to CC during our storms, during our blizzards. I don't remember there being so many snow days.
We have a lot of those now, right?
Yeah. So, you know, so I've this community, I love it. This is my community. But when I graduated from CC, we were in a recession, and I couldn't find a job to save my life.
Oh.
So I ended up going to Denver, and I worked for Mi Casa Women's Resource Center and Caldera Women's Employment Education, which is, we call CWE. And it was helping women get off of public assistance into jobs or into job training, you know, helping with resumes. And a lot of times I was getting them into jobs that had higher pay than I was making and better benefits.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was like, well, there's something wrong with this picture. Although I loved helping them, I was like, I needed to get, you know, kind of the nature of the nonprofit world, right?
Right.
And I made my way to California, and I worked at a temp agency while I was looking for the job of my dreams, right? And I'm looking, and every job that I applied for, I was offered that job.
Love it.
And yeah, I needed to know Spanish, and every job, you know, it was Spanish was a requisite to know Spanish.
Yeah.
And I was working at this temp agency. It was a machine shop, and there was about 50 employees in the machine shop, mostly Vietnamese, and there was this president and vice president. And I was covering for a woman that was out on maternity leave. And they came to me and they said, Yolanda, we really want you to stay and be our front person and payroll. We only had to show you once, and you've got it. And I said, oh, thank you so much, but I've applied for a job as an investigator trainee for the County of Orange. And they started laughing. They were like, you won't get a job there. You have to know someone to get a job there. And you're from Colorado. You don't know anybody. And I just smiled at them. And 3 weeks later, I got the job offer.
That's right, you did.
But guess what's interesting is that four of us got the job offer. The other three were related to people in the county.
Oh, wow.
So they were right. And so it was a surprise that I got it. But I love this job. I mean, I didn't like weekends because I couldn't be at work.
Oh,
and
my God.
They'd asked me to go to the jail. I went to a lot of jails and prisons. I mean, yeah. This was CSI. This is like why people watch all these movies. Right,
right.
I was doing these investigations. It was a different case every day. It was exciting. And there came a point, like I had been doing it for 5 years, and I bought me a new car, and it was a Toyota Camry with a sunroof, with a moonroof, totally loaded. I had money in my pocket, right?
You were living the dream.
I was living the dream, and here I am in Newport Beach, California, and I'm going back to the office, and I get on my phone, one of those cell phones that are as heavy as a brick. I mean, you know, I don't know how many of your audience would remember those, or if they were even born, but these things were as heavy as a brick. And I just remember getting, you know, I had gotten on the phone and asked people if they needed me to pick up subpoenas or anything as I was heading into the office. And I got off the phone thinking, wow, look at me. I've got it going on because
yeah.
I've got change in my pocket. I've got this new ride. I look up and there's palm trees. And I said, I am so grateful. I am just so grateful for all that's gone on in my life. I said, it's true. You work hard and you can do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
And at that time I was like, I am going to be the number one chief investigator. And then 3 years later, I was having real issues with my vision at night and just things I couldn't put my finger on. And I got this diagnosis that was, it's called retinitis pigmentosa.
Oh, wow.
And the doctor really didn't tell me a lot. He says, you know, your cones and rods they're dying off, and you know, and you're suffering vision loss. And I was in shock when I got that diagnosis.
So I can imagine.
I had driven there, right? It was the UCLA Medical Center, and I drove straight to the bookstore. And I read about the different eye conditions. And it said retinitis pigmentosa, prognosis, complete blindness.
Oh my goodness.
And I lost it. I was like, really, God? I have worked my butt off. I have done everything. I said, this was not in my plans. I was going to be chief investigator. And I, when I got it, I thought, what do blind people do? And my idea was that not very much. And I had this idea, it's this implicit bias that we have, that I didn't see what people in wheelchairs could do, or people that were blind, or
right.
people that just looked different. I didn't know that they were still completely capable.
Absolutely.
So, right? But I just was in a fog, really, for around 2 years. I was, just didn't know what to do. I hid my blindness.
Because wow.
I didn't want people to think of me any less. And finally, I was discovered. Somebody snitched me out. and to my surprise, not really surprised, but my employers, my boss, my supervisor, we had so many successful cases together, a lot of not guilties. And he said, honey, why didn't you tell me? And he wasn't being sexist or stuff, because he really cared about me. We had a very special relationship.
Yeah.
I had a special relationship with him and his wife. And so he goes, we will do everything to support you. Of course you're going to stay working here. Because I was like, I started crying. I was like, I thought you guys might fire me or
let me
go. And I didn't know what to do and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, no, you've taken care of us and we're going to take care of you. And so that was about halfway through my term. I was there 21 years, and I got some blind skills. I learned how to use a cane. I learned the readers, how to use a computer.
Wow.
And they supported me through all that, and I was able to still do my work. A lot of it were office interviews, you know, with my clients, and office interviews where I could go to. But I had a student interns who I was a field supervisor to, who I just had them, I dictated to them, and I actually created a lot of fine lawyers, people that ended up working for the FBI, people that became judges.
Wow.
And so I was able to mentor a lot of people through this process.
Yeah.
So then I retire when I'm 21 years later in 2011. And I knew that I was going to come back to be with my mom. My mom was going to turn 90, and it was time for me to come back. So when I came back, I thought, oh, I'm just going to read. I was doing audiobooks, like 4 books a week. I was like, oh, I'm going to just read audiobooks, and I'm going to do yoga and hang out with mom and just, you know, relax. And so I had bought a house in 2005. So I came back. And I'm really living here, and I'm trying to figure out my bus transportation, because I neglected to say this. So when I transferred over to, I gave my car keys to my daughter in the year 2000, right at the change of the century, and I transferred to bus. So buses were passing every 10, 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
Every sidewalk was walkable. There were the accessible ramps. I live 2 miles from work, so I could choose to walk to work or take a bus.
Yeah.
So usually I would take a bus to work and then walk home so I wouldn't be all sweaty at work. And so I come here, and buses are only Monday through Friday.
Wow.
And they stop at 5:30.
Ugh.
And the sidewalks, if they exist,
yep.
are not yep. walkable. A third of the city lights were out. I'm like, what the heck happened to my city?
Yeah.
What is going on here? And then I could see the difference between my district and other parts of town.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, no. And so I started to go speak before city council and the PPRTA. And people were coming to me and saying, oh, will you be on my committee? Will you do the organizing for transit? Will you be on my board? And I was like, wow. And I was like, sure.
Quite the retirement
but
for you.
Right? I was like, okay. And then by the time I knew it, I was doing 40 hours a week in volunteering.
Wow.
But I was loving life. And we went from 5 days a week for a couple of years later, maybe 3 years later, we ended up having buses, evening routes, and 7 days a week.
I love it. Yes.
Yeah. And we were starting to get our sidewalks fixed. And that is exactly why I ran for council, because I was like, I wanted to make sure that we increased transit and that we fixed our road, that we got our fair share of that 2C money to fix our roads, to fix our bridges, to fix our sidewalks. And I also wanted, that was the major thing, but after a while was economic development. How come we don't have any restaurants here? We can just sit down and be mm-hmm. waited on. And I just, it just started to spiral. And I ran for council in 2015 and didn't make it. And I call it my practice run because I learned what I needed to do, right?
Yes.
And so for 2017, I took a candidate class in 2016. And I was like, I was ready to rock and roll. I got me a team, as they suggested. And so it was such a great process to reconnect with my neighbors, my friends, and making a whole new set of friends here in Southeast. So I now counsel, it's 60 hours a week for $6,250 a year. I think people don't realize that. So we're definitely doing it for the money. And we're just, it's just, it's been peaks and valleys. Overall, this is what I see that I was destined to do all my life. That I've been preparing for this, because what I've learned out of this disability is that I'm still me, right?
Absolutely.
The depth and breadth of who I am, and every person on this planet, right? Their set of experience, and that those five senses are just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
And that my blindness doesn't define me. However, it's opened a whole new door. I think I'm able to see a lot more, because sometimes I see the vision distracts people. It distracts them where they're just looking at everything and not really listening to what's in front of them.
Absolutely.
And I'm able to catch that. So I tell people, I may not have sight, but I have a clear vision for our community.
Oh, so inspirational. Oh my gosh. It is incredible, your story, what you've done with your life. I think most people would have easily been like, you know what? I got this diagnosis. I'm just going to give up. You know, I'm just going to apply for disability and I'm just going to be at home and be angry at the world and be mad that this happened to me. But you didn't. You continue out of work. Thankfully, you had good support system at that job. And then you came back, retire, which quite the retirement for you. And now completely did, you know, like a 180 and created this whole other life after that life you had already created. You know, most people don't even get that first one. And you're on the second, you know, go round, and you're impacting so many people. And the fact that even the bus is running 7 days a week, like, that's for anybody in the community that, you know, has that need for the bus system. Like, that is helping everyone, not just people with disabilities, but I think sometimes we forget, you know, like if you have a car, or if, you know, you have your vision, and if you have no, you know, if you're able-bodied in every which way, it's so easy to forget that there is those in our community that do need these resources, that do need that. So I think having you on the council and having you as a voice in our community is so important, because you bring perspective, not only to what you personally know, but you're also helping those in the community that need it the most. Because this, as you guys know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the Southeast in some of the interviews because of the people that I've had on. And, you know, last episode I had Joy Salazar, which is the outreach community coordinator for Rice, right? And all of these things are to bring a voice and to be able to provide these things for people. But it is such a selfless way, because you're not doing it for a pat on the back. You're not doing it. You're doing it because you care, and you're doing it because it's important. And that's inspirational all on its own. But the fact that you do have a disability, the fact that you have to work, you know, two times harder to read some of those memos or get some of that information, and you have to have all these different aids to be able to provide you with, you know, the same guidelines that, you know, maybe I could just pick up a piece of paper and look at something and disregard it. For you, there's so much more that goes behind that. And it's so easy for us to look at the world and see people being successful and being like, oh, you know, it's this person is this because of that. And when we hear about what took to get you, you know, where you're at, it's so inspirational and it's so beautiful. And like, it just fills my heart with warmth, because honestly, like, I heard you speak before, but I think that having you in front of me, and you know, you have your guide dog, right? You know, he's taking a little nap. He's like, oh great, she doesn't need me right now. But it really is what you do with the circumstances that life presents at you, you know? But
I do want to be honest, is like, I went through 2 years of a fog, and I did at that time think, I'm just going to go on disability, and I'm going to go home and live with mom, and I'm going to die. Ugh. So I did go through that struggle, and I just want to put out there, it's okay, right? You got to go through it all, because it's like probably the five stages of death, right? The anger, the denial. I kept thinking at one point it was going to come back. I was totally in denial. I was like, it's going to come back. It's going to come back no matter what. And I was bargaining. I was doing all those stages of death, you know, of loss, of losing my vision. But I did come around, and it's really great. I did have support. But I think people don't like to reach out to support, to ask for support.
Yeah.
And that is important to do.
It is.
And I was, you know, I would fly into town, rent a car. I was always the driver. I'd always tell people, I'll pick you up. We're going to go here. I'd always start, you know, where we're going out for dinner, or where we're going out to dance or whatever. And it was a whole different life. But I realized it was a humbling experience where I needed to start to ask for support. Not beg for it, but just enough support to help me, to guide me to a certain extent, but yet to let me go off and fly on my own. So I have gone through that. And if people end up, you know, getting a certain diagnosis, I mean, it's not just, it could be cancer, it could be these other diagnoses that are tough. And they may go through it, and it's okay to hate life for a minute, or to hate it, you know, and to process it. But you know that there's such a reason to come back and to share with other people your struggle, and to let people know that they can still do things, and probably even in a better way, in a stronger way.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, a month, 5 months, it doesn't matter the length of time. It is what you do with those feelings and those emotions that arise, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I came to this country at 10 years old, and I was angry. Yeah. I was angry at my parents. I didn't understand the language. I hated the food. Hated everything. There was a lack of freedom, because in Mexico, you just run around outside and it's this freedom feeling. And here it's like, you know, if you're this age, you have to have a parent home, and, you know, and
so many regulations.
Yeah. So many regulations and rules that I felt so constricted, and I was so mad and I was so angry. And when I do workshops with elementary school students, I tell them that, you know, I tell them, like, at your age, I was angry. And then I realized, like, it was literally poison. I was poisoning myself being angry. And then I realized I had to do something, right? I had to assimilate. I had to accept.
Yeah.
That accepting part is so hard. It's so hard to accept the circumstances that you're now in, whether it's a life-changing move, you know, like myself, or it's a life-changing diagnosis like yourself. It really is what you do with that. It really is how you transform from that, because staying in that feeling of despair or hate or, you know, ugliness, that storm, you know, because that storm can be anything depending on what it is that you're going through, you know, and it's easier to weather, you know, like to go in and actually just be like, what can I do from this? Like, what is possible from this? And just try it, you know. And for me, I got involved, and I when I went to middle school, I started, you know, going and speaking for the ESL students and advocating to, like, different, I would go to, like, the Bureau of Businesses, so they would give, like, you know, money and donations, so, like, the ESL program could have more books, or we could get a computer and all these different things. And that's really what got me started on wanting to advocate and wanting to give people a voice, because I realized, like, okay, like, this is important. Like, it's not just about me. It's about setting an example for those that come after me. I'm the oldest of five, you know, and for me, it was very important that my little siblings see that, like, you know, it's important to make something of yourself, irregardless of what it is that you have gone through and irregardless of what it is that you're currently living through. And every day, you know, I still could be angry. You know, every day I still could be mad at the world. There's so many different things that have happened since then. That was just the first big life-changing one, you know. And I'm sure there's things in your life, you know, like you were a single mom at first, and then you went and made this whole beautiful life in California and had this whole beautiful job. And then, bam, diagnosis, life change. Yeah. 2 years of, you know, having this storm and having to work through, like you said, the five stages of grief, really, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But look at you now.
And I like what you said about acceptance, because people sometimes just tolerate, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're tolerating, you're still in resistance. You're still not loving life. So if you, like you said, with you embrace this acceptance, it really changes one's life in such a positive way. And you could just be free. Like, I feel so free. I feel like I'm able to say whatever I want to do. And I do. I feel free. I feel very grateful for everything that I have. And I get to be with my puppy, my golden retriever, 24/7. And that's just the best.
It is. It really is. And, you know, again, you're so inspirational, and it's so beautiful what you're doing with the second go around at your life. Again, you could have stayed home and been like, I'm retired, I'm done, I don't care, the world out there can burn, not my problem. But you didn't, and you're here, and you're continuing to, you know, create change for our community, not only for people with disabilities, but for Latin people like us, and for people that, you know, need a voice. You know, the Southeast, which is District 4, needs a voice more than ever, because this area of town is often forgotten. It really is. And so it is important to give the people and the citizens of District 4 a voice. And you're doing that beautifully. And I know you're just going to keep getting reelected each and every time, because we're going to make sure of that. And
thank you, Nathan. Yes, right on.
Right. We have to. We have to advocate for those that advocate for us. We really do. It is our job and our duty to ensure that, you know, you can keep doing your job, and you're doing a beautiful job at it. But now I want to know, you go home, you know, how do you decompress? How do you, you know, let go of the office stuff and all the different issues that, you know, come with being a councilwoman? What hobbies do you have? What do you do for fun? How do you decompress?
Okay, so I still read a lot of books on audio. Just two a week now.
That's amazing.
However, I love to go salsa dancing.
Oh.
And I'm a salsera. I mean, I grew up, my mom, you know, taught us to dance mambos and cha-cha-chas and on top of ballet folklorico since we were like 3 years old. So all seven of us, we can jam. We can get our groove on. And our kids can too. It's amazing.
I love it.
So, I mean, I do it rare, maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months. But it's reading the books. I walk at least 2 or 3 miles with my dog every day.
Wow, that's amazing.
And sometimes, you know, I'll just watch a really good movie, the movies that I want to see on TV. I have my face right on top of the screen. But, I catch a lot of it. And so, yeah, I do. But, like, we have our Monday and Tuesday work session and regular session. So this weekend I will be studying for that.
There is a job to be done, and you know, you got the homework to do.
And it's a good thing I enjoy it, though.
That's good. Exactly.
And I've learned so much. And I just wanted to say, I don't know if people realize that we are also the board of directors for our CSU, for our utilities company. It's citizen owned. So anybody that gets a bill owns the utilities company.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so it's another part of our position. And so we're running a four-service company that's gas, electric, water, and wastewater. And a lot of companies do just gas and electric.
Right.
Some do just water. We have all four services. And so I am on what's called the personnel committee, mm-hmm. and our committee was responsible for hiring our new CEO that we hired 5 months ago.
Wow.
And we did a whole a nationwide search, and we have an amazing CEO, Adam Benjamin. And so we are also on, I don't know if people know, on other boards and commissions. I'm on the PPRTA board. I'm on the PPACG board. I'm on the airport commission.
Wow.
I'm part of the human relations commission. And so I attend all these meetings, and that's why I work so many hours, because we have to fulfill all of those obligations.
Right.
But I want to make sure that my district is still in the loop. So I'm down here. I had two town halls yesterday here that I am in constant contact with the constituents here in this district.
I love
it. But it's fun. I mean, it's live.
I love it. Look at you. Oh my goodness, Councilwoman Yolanda. It really is inspiring to see what you're doing with your life and how you're unstoppable. You're not, I mean, you're go, 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 go. So I'm glad that you have things, you know, that help you decompress at home. But more than anything, I'm glad that you're out here in our community, giving our people a voice and taking care of yourself along the way and just doing it so gracefully, and that really is inspiring. And I know that those of you that are listening, whether you're here in Colorado Springs or whether you're in any other part of the world, it is inspirational to see what people can do with the circumstances that have been dealt to them. So remember that you also have that power. It is within you. You can unlock it at any time. It's not some magic thing that was just, you know, handed to anybody. It is within you and what you decide to do with those experiences. Guys, I really, really hope that you are inspired and you're just like, I can go out there and do anything if she could do it. You know, every time that I bring you a new episode of Women Who Inspire, that is my goal, that you will hear these amazing women that are doing incredible things and realize that they are women just like you and I, and that anything is possible as long as you set your mind to it and you put in the work, because sometimes there is a lot of work with it, but you have to do it. If you want it bad enough, anything is achievable. Yolanda, Councilwoman Yolanda, how can people find you online?
They can go to my, reach me at City Council. I'm at yavila, which is Y-A-V-I-L-A, at springsgov.com. Also, go like my Facebook page, which is Yolanda Avila for City Council. And elect to be my friend. I always want more friends. There can never be enough friends.
That's right. That's right. Guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode. I will be back next week with something else for you guys. As always, be happy, be healthy, we'll be well. If you want to keep up with us on social media, simply search Life Cope LLC. You can check out our website, lifecopeapp.podomatic.com. And if you want to keep up with me, nancyiperez.com. I'll catch you next week. See ya.
Bye-bye.